Chapter 6. The Giant Imbarak. From a distance, a strange noise like distant thunder reached the ears of the six travelers. Fear replaced curiosity as the noise grew and included the sound of huge trees snapping and crashing down the mountainside. The ground around them began to tremble. "Earthquake!" shouted Christopher, his voice swallowed by the din. The path beneath them ceased its shuddering. The noise lapsed into complete silence as if the forest held its breath. "No, not an earthquake," Sylvan sighed. "Seraph's mischief, I suspect." "Seraph did that?" Christopher croaked, as panic swallowed whole his delusions of saving Elise and Jeremy. A creature able to break trees and shake the ground held them captive, and he was their hope of rescue? He could not do it. He was too small, too weak. "Do not be afraid, Master. You are chosen for this. The True One is with us, with you. You will succeed as long as you depend on him. You will fail if you rely on yourself." "But how do I do that? What do I do?" "He will guide you. You must learn to be quiet and listen, and you must remember lessons that you have been taught." Some of his resolve returned. "I do know this. We must go." "We go with you, Master, but you must choose the path. The way to the left goes up through the mountain pass, leading to Heart's Blood Hill. It is broad and much safer, but it is long, and we may not reach our destination in time. The way to the right is less often traveled. It is narrow and overgrown. It passes down through the bog and through a cavern, which opens out across a small valley at the base of Heart's Blood Hill. This path is much shorter, but also treacherous. Some Imbaraks who pass this way have never again been seen. Humans call it the Way of No Return. I do not tell you this to frighten you, nor to influence your decision, but only that you may fully understand your choices. Christopher turned away to think through the dilemma. With the left path, he may not arrive in time to save Elise and Jeremy. But on the right path, I will endanger my companions, and I have no right to do that. Turning to his followers, "We'll go to the left at double the speed we started. I can keep that pace for hours." "It will be necessary, Master," Sylvan cautioned. Christopher looked up at the mountain pass. "I can do it. Gallant, let's go." The small band of rescuers broke into stride. Jasmer pulled alongside Christopher and began talking. "Master, are you sure you can keep this pace? It is quite fast, even for Imbaraks, especially with the distance we must travel." Christopher nodded, wanting to save his breath for running. It would be hard, but he could make it to the mountain pass. Then it would be downhill the rest of the way. Looking up and straight ahead, he saw his goal. He could run that distance at this pace, even uphill. Jasmer accepted Christopher's decision, but continued to run beside him. He launched into a detailed description of the process Imbaraks used in gathering the sun's energy and its potential form of condensing water droplets as humidity and dropping evening temperatures would allow. Imbarak technology had advanced to near perfection, and using ordinary water and minuscule crystalline seeds found in Imbarak's hair, skin, and nails to synthesize almost flawless imitations of precious stones. The myriad uses of their treasures bordered on the miraculous, making human technology look primitive. Pre-Stone Age, as Jasmer called it, laughing at his own play on words. The only drawback, technically speaking, was the law that all droplets collected, save those used for capes or other survival necessities, must be deprocessed and restored to the earth by the rising of the sun. Humans generally recognize this activity and the beauty of morning dew just before the sun liberated its bottled energy. The path grew steeper and up ahead disappeared into darkness, not of night, but of something more solid, as if obscured by fog or overgrowth. Christopher had seen this several years before on a mountain trek during a family vacation, but that was in daylight, and night has its way of shrouding the familiar and keeping it just beyond the reach of memory. Though familiar, the sight ahead clouded Christopher's thoughts with uneasiness. A fog crept in as Jasmer's mouth rambled on. Almost there, Christopher wondered if fog or some kind of mountain mist would make this path and speed so difficult for an Imbarak. At that moment, the path veered sharply to the right, and Christopher found himself no longer running toward the pass. The lump of fear in his throat threatened to cut off his air supply. He knew why the Imbaraks were concerned. "Cutbacks," he whispered, losing all hope of beating the Sunrise or Seraph. The fog grew thicker. "Oh, Master, don't tell me you thought we would run straight up the mountain. I'm an Imbarak, not a mountain goat. It would take a full day of hard climbing to go straight up to the pass, unless, of course, you're able to fly. Oh, Master, you will never be able to keep this pace, and there will be no time for rest. Why, I don't think I can make it." The fog grew so thick, Christopher's sword illuminated only the next few yards of the path. He tried to grip the hilt harder, but all his reserve strength was exhausted. He cut his pace. Sylvan quietly watched his young human friend as he ran with Jasmer just ahead in the clear night air. He sensed Christopher's distress grow as Jasmer continued to describe the hopelessness of their situation. He expected Christopher to burst out in anger or tears at any moment. Jasmer's relentless rush of words caused Christopher's pace to increase once more. His mind whirled and he ran blindly, staying close to the sound of Jasmer's voice to keep on the path. Since Jasmer had not commented on the fog, Christopher suspected it was not physical, not external, but somehow internal, mental, emotional, or maybe he was going blind. Only his concentration on breathing kept him from exploding into a confusion of panic and anger. Starting to speak to Jasmer, Sylvan felt a fresh breeze enwrap him. A familiar voice riding that breeze whispered a simple, "No." Sylvan responded, "Help him, true one." The breeze unwrapped itself with parting words, "I have." At the same moment Sylvan first heard the voice, Christopher took a deep breath of mountain air so fresh that it swept through his body and into his mind. It cleared the murky vapors of despair with a single thought, which blasted from Christopher's lips as he stopped abruptly and shouted it aloud, "No." The whole company came to a startled halt, except for Jasmer. Several strides later, realizing Christopher had spoken, he looked back to apologize. Having neglected to inform his feet of the decision, they continued on and, without eyes, stumbled over a small tree fallen across the path. Regaining his feet, the embarrassed Imbarak relied on his greatest strength to regain some of his dignity. He immediately began talking. "Master, I'm so sorry. I did not realize what you said. You did say no, didn't you? I am sorry I'm so slow to respond. I will try to do better." After a brief but thoughtful pause, he continued, "But Master, what exactly did you mean when you said no?" "For the life of me, I do not know." He looked down. "And what is this tree doing in the middle of the path? Dear me, you would think people would clean up their messes. Why, I could have hurt myself badly just..." "Jasmer, hush, please." This time it was Christopher who stopped the runaway Imbarak. Jimwell laughed the most beautiful and contagious laugh, somehow strangely familiar to Christopher. It was a sound that heals fear, pain, and hopelessness. Jasmer's embarrassment changed to a chuckle. Glimmer's echo of the small healer's medicine was a laugh of joy foretelling the death of his sorrow. Gallant's single sharp bark started his tail wagging, a cheerful rhythm. Sylvan's satisfaction with his young master was seen more in the bright of his eyes than in the slight smile stealing across his lips. From the forest, a deep, unfamiliar laugh joined the happy commotion. Sylvan and Gallant turned to locate the stranger. Jimwell and Glimmer, startled by Gallant spinning to face the forest, interrupted their laughter to hold on to their mount. They joined their companions, peering into the deep forest for the source of the strange laughter. Christopher pivoted and located the stranger immediately. Jasmer, whose chuckle had grown into a full, eyes-closed, tight, Imbarak bellow of delight, was the last to become aware of the presence of the stranger. The deep laughter ceased. Christopher stepped to the edge of the path, held forth the true sword, pointing it toward a huge boulder, and commanded, "Show yourself, friend or foe." The boulder unfurled into an Imbarak larger than any Grandpa had mentioned. The giant stood a good foot taller than Christopher's dad. Glimmer felt an involuntary shudder seize his body as he remembered Seraph in his Imbarak disguise. Jasmer also trembled, remembering the evil angel the same size. The creature stood with its head bowed. Seeing the alarm on his companions' faces and sharing their suspicion, Christopher commanded, "Speak your true name." The creature kneeled, and raising its head to answer, met several sighs of relief as the others saw ember eyes dancing with mirth. "My name, my young lord, is Granite, but please do not take me for granted. Though I'm broad for my height, my burden is light, and my feet seldom stay where they're planted." The last line of his verse was delivered while dancing several steps of a jig so nimbly his feet only brushed the ground before being once again airborne. He ended again on one knee, his head bowed, his hand extended. "At your service, my lord, a service I know 'twill be hard, but the true sword you wield and the cape that's your shield make your service the safest by far. Will you please stop talking in rhyme? We are on a serious mission. My brother and sister's lives are in danger, and most likely a greater catastrophe is at risk. Tell me how you know about the sword, the cape, and the difficulty of our mission. Besides us, only enemies are likely to know so much, and only spies hide themselves. How long have you been watching us?" Granite looked up at Christopher, still smiling. "As you wish, my master." He stood, rubbing his back. "Thank you for not accusing me of actually being an enemy, but of only seeming to be one." Sylvan smiled. Christopher had not jumped to negative conclusions about someone else's actions and words. Granite, his smile accented by a knit brow of pain, turned and looked at the place where Christopher discovered him. "You see, that was not my hiding place, but rather my resting place. And that poor young tree is how I came to choose this spot rather than the bottom of yon cliff." He pointed to a drop of about 50 feet, only several yards off the path. "I do like trees, and I avoided so many coming down, but it was her or the cliff. I wish we had met under more pleasant circumstances, but I shall not soon forget her." He rubbed his back once more. Jasmer took advantage of the pause. "Could you get to the point, and why on earth did you leave this tree in the path? I scraped my shins to the bone. My, how some creatures do go on." Everyone turned and looked at Jasmer in disbelief. Christopher said to Granite, "Please, start at the beginning and tell us how you came to be here. But do be quick about it. Our time is very short, and we should move on while you tell us your story." Christopher turned to set the pace once more, but felt Granite's huge hands take him gently under the arms and lift him. Without struggle, he allowed Granite to place him on his shoulders. "To be brief, Master Christopher Harris," Sylvan answered. "To be brief, Master Christopher Harris, a huge rock slide has made this path impassable. The mountain pass is completely blocked. Surely you heard it not more than a half hour ago, judging by the movement of stars since that time." Christopher had known immediately. The "no," he repeated, was meant to halt the fear and hopelessness blinding him. But he now knew it also meant they should follow the other path, despite its dangers. "Back to the fort, Gallant. Lead us to the swamp, boy." Granite followed behind Gallant, carrying Christopher. Sylvan ran by his side, listening to his story. Jasmer hobbled along behind, nursing his shins, though he stayed close enough to hear the giant's tale. "I am a traveler. I spend most of my time in the mountains above the tree line. I suppose that is one of the reasons I do love trees so. Besides, they are one of the few creatures taller than me. I was traveling above the mountain pass, just below the peak, speculating on the odd disappearance of the moon. I came upon such a beautiful view of the starlit mountain lake below, I decided to sit for a while and tell the all-powerful one how full of wonder I found this sight and this night. I had composed the first lines. Deep calls into deep, while the world in shallow sleep awaits the coming dawn. Stars foretell the day when the dark shall flee away before the rising one. I started to speak the lines aloud to see how they worked for the ear when a small pebble from above painfully warned me that not only was I not wearing my hood, but that something was above me. I turned fully prepared to scold a silly mountain goat for being awake at such a late hour and climbing in the moonless dark. I heard a voice that did not belong there. It did not belong to this world at all. I immediately covered with only the tiniest crack through which to peek. In the next instant, the most beautiful angel I've seen stepped onto the ledge where I sat. He glowed like the light of a full moon, but when I saw those two black, empty, yet hate-filled to spilling over eyes, I knew this was Seraph, and the mystery of the vanished moon was solved. I saw him once before when I was very young, in a garden on the other side of the world. The True One granted me favor. I covered and served as a support for the good man, who knelt leaning upon me, asking for strength to complete his mission. Seraph sat in a tree nearby, wrapped about a limb, oozing that same dark poison from those same dead eyes. Back to the present. Beside him stood two small children, a girl on his left and a boy on his right. Elise and Jeremy, my brother and sister, responded Christopher. The pieces to the puzzle fall in place, said Granite. So that is why you have been chosen. Forgive me, Master, but your brother and sister are not well. Their faces were dark with fear, confusion, and I am afraid that greed was there as well. The false angel let them look at the valley through two gems he handed them, which he called their gifts. I heard the children exclaim about all the exciting castles, parks, carnivals, theaters, a huge mansion where the old house stands, and on and on. The beast snatched away the jewels and said, "All this and more can be yours. If you listen to me and obey me in all I tell you to do, then you will be king and queen over all you see." The children were angry, but believed Seraph could deliver on what he promised. Jeremy said, "Elise, won't it be fun?" "Yeah, but I wonder where Mom and Dad and Christopher and Grandpa and Gallant will be, and Michelle. I haven't seen any of them in these pictures." Seraph answered, "Oh, they will be right where they want to be, when they swear allegiance to us and to our new wonderful, fun-filled, enchanted kingdom. We will all be one happy family. And why wouldn't they? If for no other reason, they will want to be part of your kingdom because of you." "But what if one of them doesn't want to? What will happen to them?" asked Elise with a frown. "Well, you can't make people have fun if they choose sadness, can you?" Seraph countered. "But don't you think everyone in your family is smarter than that?" "Oh, they'll do it, Elise." Jeremy did not sound so sure, but I suppose he thought he might get to look at the gifts if they ever stopped arguing. "I guess so," Elise sighed. Seraph gave the trinkets to the children once more and said, "Imagine what you want to be there, and it will be soon." After several moments of tantalizing the children, Seraph mentioned, "Of course, we will have to remove most of the trees and all the brush to build your kingdom." I couldn't believe it. Neither child so much as blinked. Jeremy just nodded. Elise said, "Okay, hey, Jeremy, look at this great playhouse." Seraph said, "Good. At dawn, when all the forest creatures are assembled, we will begin." Both children simply nodded. By this time, they were completely entangled in Seraph's fantasy. Seraph pointed at what I suspect was your party coming up the path and said, "More of your enemies carrying torches. A human traitor, four forest demons, and a wolf. And be sure, this is only the advance guard." With whimpers of fear, both children drew in under his wings for protection. He smiled a wicked, victorious, deceiving smile and said, "Don't worry, we will block their path, and tomorrow they will be gone with the forest." He put his foot on me and pushed. Going over the edge, I began rolling, bumping a boulder here or there, starting them down the mountain. After a moment, I looked through the crack, and I was only a stone's throw ahead of a tremendous rock slide. I uncovered and began to run down the slope. I knew I must get to the side of the slide. I ran at an angle to this side, dodging several large boulders. I cleared the slide by the time I reached the tree line, but I was running so fast I could not stop. I managed to miss all the trees until I saw the cliff. I knew that young tree was my only chance. I covered, but was not completely hardened when we met. Again he rubbed his back. She suffered much more than I. I rolled painfully across the path into the brush where you found me, and fell into a dreamless sleep until Sister Jimwell, answered Sylvan. How pretty! 'Tis a pity she's so small. Until Sister Jimwell's laughter awakened me. Christopher said, "What can be done for Elise and Jeremy? Is there no hope? Have they already chosen Seraph?" "As things stand, there is no hope. If not already, They will soon be so deceived by him, they will believe it when he tells them he is the true one, Sylvan answered. What can we do? Asked Christopher. They must see Seraph as he really is, and they must face the true consequences of their choices. A horrible thought struck Christopher, and he whispered it aloud. But what if after Seraph is exposed for what he truly is, they still choose him? The cost will be high, said Granite. Christopher's sight dimmed as dark thoughts of losing Elise or Jeremy flooded his mind. He squinted hard to hold in the tears. A thought, a prayer, struggled to the surface from that flood of tears. With his last bit of mental strength, it broke through. Father, protect my brother and sister. Father, protect your children. In response, he heard, Do not be afraid. I am with you, with them, always.